ओम अज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। मुखं करोति वचलं पंगुं लंगायते गिरं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्री गुरुं दीनतारिणं। नमामो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनिति नाम्ने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पश्चातदेशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So just in the previous class, we have seen how Krishna is the source of all incarnations. We saw the Ramadi Murti show that verse. We saw how Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. And then we saw how he is the source of all material creation, and also he is the source and he is the abode of all rasa. So now today we'll continue to see how Krishna is the basis of everything, the material and the spiritual world, and how he's the lord of the all. He's the lord of all lords. He's the controller of everyone. So that is what we will be seeing today. And today will be class number. Today is class number 16, and we will be covering verses 43 to 46. So I'll first read verse number 43.
गोलोकनाम्नि निजदाम्नि तले च तस्य देवी महेश हरिधाम सुतेषु तेषु ते ते प्रभावनिश्चया विहितश्च येन गोविन्दमादिपुरुषं तमहं भजामि। गोलोकनाम्नि, द प्लानेट नोन एज गोलोक वृंदावन, Nijadhamni, the personal abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tale, in a part underneath, Cha, also, Tasya, of that, Devi, the goddess Durga, Mahesha, of Lord Shiva, Hari, of Narayana, Dhamasu, the, in the planets, Teshu Teshu, in each of them, Tete, those respective, Prabhava Nishchayaha, opulences, Vihita, established, Cha, also, yena, by whom, Govindam, Govinda, Adipurusham, the original person, tam, him, aham, I, bhajami, worship. Translation, lowest of all is located Devi Dham, mundane world. Next about it is Mahesh Dham, abode of Mahesha. Above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham, abode of Hari, and above them, all is located, above them all is located Krishna's own realm named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those created realms.
So in this verse, Brahma is telling us that he is worshipping Govinda, who lives in Goloka Vrindavan, and this Goloka Vrindavan is the highest planet, and he has awarded the rulers their potency under their jurisdiction. So that's why it says in this verse that I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers and of those graded realms. So we see here that Goloka Vrindavan is actually the highest planet, and and everything comes from Krishna. He is the source of everything. Both different realms within this material universe and outside this material universe in the spiritual world are actually described in this verse. Now, first, there is a mention about Devi Dham.
So as we all know, Devi Dham is this material universe. And there are so many, we saw in some of the previous verses, how so many golden eggs are coming out from the pores of the body of Mahavishnu. So each of these golden eggs is a universe by itself, and it is often called as the Brahma's egg, Brahmanda. It is called as Brahmanda. Now, in each of these eggs, we are in one egg. So we are in the bhuloka of one of these eggs. So each of these, they have 14 planetary systems. There is 14 systems of planets. It's not like just there are just 14 planets, but rather it has 14 planetary systems. And in all these 14 planetary systems, conditioned souls are entrapped by Maya. Everybody is ruled by Maya Devi. And hence, this place is called as Devi Dham. Now, if you look at the middle planetary systems, the middle planetary systems are Bhu, Bhuvar, and Swar. That is Bhuloka, Bhuvar Loka, Swargaloka. Here, generally, the inhabitants are engaged in fruitive activities. And the kind, and that's why they are generally called as ideal grihasthas, because they are always engaging in different kinds of fruitive activities, and they keep engaging in the ideal grihastha work. They keep shuttling between these three planetary systems. If you look at the planetary systems above Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, and Swargaloka, you have Mahajana, Tapa, and Satyaloka. So here you see many beings who are perfected in Brahmachari, who are perfected Brahmacharis and Vanaprasthas and sannyasis. So generally, in these top, higher planetary systems, beyond the Swargaloka, Mahajana, Tapa and Satyaloka, you will see a lot of perfected Brahmacharis and Vanaprasthas and even sannyasis. So like this, they are ideal in their Vartashrama. Similarly, below these three planetary systems, below Bhu, Bhuvar and Swargam, just below Bhuloka, you have the lower planetary systems, which is Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala and Patala. Here, the people who are here generally are very adharmic. They don't adhere to any proper dharma. Like you see, in the middle planetary systems, there is a lot of, grihastha dharma that is followed. In the upper planetary systems, they are all doing some kind of dharma, the varnashram. But whereas in the lower planetary systems, like Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Rasatala, you can call it as the hellish planets, not exactly the hellish planets, but the lower heavenly abodes. There you have all these Rakshasas and others who are not adhering to any dharmic principles. So like this, everybody who are encapsulated within this Brahma's egg, they are all subject to the effect of Maya. That is, they are all under the control of Devi. Now, around each egg, we know that there are different layers of covering. So, like, if you just look at the Goloka chart, you can actually get an entire vision of this this Brahmanda, how it is situated, how the 14 worlds are situated, and how we are in the Bhuloka. Now, covering this shell, there are actually different layers. There are different layers of earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, and Mahatattva. So these are the different layers that are covering this shell. So even here, in these layers also, there is a lot of opulence that is present. So when a yogi who is trying to give up his body is aiming at liberation, when he wants to escape from this material world, he has to pass through these layers, actually, when he's trying to exit this material world. And while he's passing, the test is whether he's able to resist the opulences that is provided in this area. Actually, even in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there is a story of how Gopakumara, he passes through these different layers, and there are so many temptations for that person. So like this, you're actually stuck in this material world, and everybody, it's very difficult to leave this prison house. It's a very, very interesting prison house where nobody wants to leave. So that kind of a prison house is Devi Dham. Now, just above the material creation is Mahesh Dham. So Mahesh Dham is actually the abode of Lord Shiva. Just outside the material universe, you have Mahesh Dham. Now, Lord Shiva, Shiva Tattva is very interesting, and it's not really completely understood by everybody. But to get some little bit of understanding, Lord Shiva, he exists at different levels. Like in the previous few verses when we were saying about creation, we were saying who Shambhu is. Shambhu is actually the dim halo of the glance of Mahavishnu, which contacts Maya. So like this, there is Shambhu, that is one category, one form of Lord Shiva. And then you have within this, that is outside the material universe, right? We saw that the glance of Mahavishnu transforms as Shambhu. That is one form of Shiva that we are already exposed to. Now there are other forms too. Like within this material universe, we know that Lord Shiva comes out from the forehead, between the eyebrows of Lord Brahma in his anger. So this was described in the Bhagavatam, how Brahma, he wanted to create progeny and everyone, all the four Kumaras, they were not interested in you know, this kind of a grihastha life, and they didn't want to create progeny, and he was very angry. Brahma got very angry, and because of his anger, between his eyebrows, there was a baby that who came out, and that was Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva, that baby, he expanded into 11 forms, and these are called as the 11 Rudras. So we have already seen so many variations. We are seeing Shambhu, we are seeing Lord Shiva, and how Lord Shiva becomes the 11 Rudras. Like this. So these 11 Rudras, they are actually waiting in a part of Shivaloka, that is in this Mahesh Dham we are seeing outside the universe. They are waiting in a portion that is known as the Mahakala Dham. These 11 Rudras, they are waiting there so that at the time of destruction, they can actually take charge of destruction. So they are waiting in this Mahakala Dham. This Mahesh Dham is actually divided into two portions. The lower part is called as Mahakala Dham, and the upper region is the Sadashiva Loka. Now this Sadashiva Sadashiva Loka is actually a part of the Vaikuntha Loka. Actually, if you have by any chance the Goloka chart and you're able to see the Goloka chart, this was explained by one Prabhu whom actually designed the Goloka chart. He gave a seminar on how this Goloka chart was actually designed, or what is the basis of everything they had put in the chart. So he was explaining that if you look at Vaikuntha, if you see the northeast corner of Vaikuntha Dham, that is like the, it is represented as a blue lotus in the Goloka chart. I can actually send a picture of the Goloka chart right after this class. So you will see in the northeast corner, you will see a planet called as Ishana. Okay, northeast corner of Vaikuntha realm or Haridham, you will actually see a planet called as Ishana. That is actually Sadashiva. But you know, in the picture, they were not able to put the northeast corner. What I'm trying to say is this material universe actually is in the northeast corner end of the spiritual world. We have heard, right, like one quarter of this manifestation is the material world and three-fourths is the spiritual world, right? So from the northeast end, from there, that is where actually the Viraja starts, and that is where Mahavishnu lies, and then from there only, that everything happens from the northeast side. Material creation lies in the northeast. But in the diagram, what they have shown everything in vertical section. That is, first on top they have shown Goloka, then they have shown Vaikuntha, then down they have shown material universe. Actually, this whole material creation should emanate from the northeast part of the spiritual world or Vaikuntha. Correct understanding is that, okay? So why I'm saying all this is, I'm trying to explain where Sadashiva is. Now, this Sadashiva that I just said, he's actually, his residence is in Vaikuntha, okay? And he is a spiritual form, or rather, he is an expansion of Lord Vishnu, this Sadashiva. Now, the Shambhu that helps Mahavishnu in creation, we saw that the glance transforms into Shambhu, right? This Shambhu is actually an expansion of that Sadashiva in Vaikuntha. Okay, the corner point of Vaikuntha, the corner end, is actually called as Sadashiva Loka. It is fully illuminated. And there, for the sake of pastimes, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayana, you can say, expands himself as Lord Sadashiva. He just likes to take the form of Lord Sadashiva for the sake of pastimes, and he's purely spiritual. Now, this Sadashiva, from him, this Shambhu expansion comes. And from the Shambhu expansion, you have the Shiva and the 11 Rudras within our universe. Okay, and after, I mean, these 11 Rudras, they're actually waiting in Mahakala Dham, which is the lower portion of this Mahesh Dham that we're just discussing. Upper portion is Sadashiva Loka, lower portion is Mahesh Dham. So they are waiting in this lower portion. And Lord Shiva, who's the person within the universe, he's living in Kailash and he's taking care of the affairs of this particular universe, being the father of our universe. So there is so much going on in Shiva Tattva. This is just a basic understanding. Of course, there are more details to this. But whatever I understood from reading and hearing, I'm just trying to share. If there are any corrections, please let me know after this class. So like this, this Shambhu is an expansion of Sadashiva and Mahamaya. You remember the consort of Shambhu was Mahamaya. She is the one who controls this universe, right? This Durga Devi. She is an expansion of Rama Devi. I hope you remember Rama Devi. Rama Devi actually is the internal Yoga Maya of, Yoga Nidra. She's called as Yoga Nidra of Mahavishnu, who's doing all the creation. Karano Dakshay Vishnu, who's doing all the creation. His consort's expansion or the external energy, you can say, is actually Mahamaya. So like this, Shiva Tattva is separate. He's not a Jiva. He is a separate Tattva. Just like we have Vishnu Tattva, we have Shakti Tattva, we have Jiva Tattva. Like that, Shiva Tattva is also present and he is present in different levels. Within the universe as well as outside the universe and as well as in the spiritual world. So much about Lord Shiva, and the main residence of Lord Shiva is called as Mahesh Dham because it is intermediary. If you see even in the Goloka chart, you will see it as an intermediary region between the spiritual world and the material world. Neither spiritual nor material, it becomes like that. Of course, the illuminated portion, Sadashiva Loka, is actually a part of Vaikuntha. But below that is actually the Mahakala Dham, which is called as the Rudra Loka or the Mahesh Dham, actual place where Mahesh Dham exists. So a perfect karmi, a person has perfected his varnashram dharma, he's lived a perfect life of a grihastha for 100 lifetimes, he can actually reach Brahma Loka, or he can even become Brahma. So that much perfection, if a person has for 100 lifetimes, he can reach Brahma Loka. By doing very severe austerities, tapas and all that, one can go to any of these planets of Mahajana, Tapa and Satya Loka again. And jnanis who perfect, who are perfected jnanis, they go to the Brahman effulgence. So like this, different people, they go up and down. But a proper bhakta, a person who has perfected devotional service, he can enter into Haridham or Vaikuntha Dham and be a servant of Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha. So this is Haridham. Above Mahesh Dham, in the Goloka chart, that which is represented by a blue lotus is called as Haridham. Now, what happens in Haridham? So, even in Haridham, you can say it is divided into different parts. Like, even in the blue lotus, you will see there are many planets. So, all the planets are together called as Vaikuntha. And just above that, you will see Ayodhya. And then there is Dwaraka, there is Mathura, and the topmost planetary system is Goloka Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna resides. So just above Vaikuntha is Ayodhya, the abode of Lord Ramachandra. Then you have Dwaraka, where Krishna is as a king. And then you have Mathura, the Mathura pastimes of Lord Krishna. And then you have Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes with the gopis and others, his you can say youth pastimes, that is Goloka Vrindavan. So this is how, these are the different levels that is present in the abode of Lord Vishnu or Narayana or Krishna or Rama, however you want to call them. So in the Brihat Bhagavata Amrita, there is actually a story of Gopakumar who goes through these different lokas. So first he enters Vaikuntha. After he reaches Mahesh Dham and all that, he sees Lord Shiva, then he sees Lord Sadashiva, all that is over, and then he enters Vaikuntha. So I'm just kind of describing that part so that we understand how there are different gradations in Vaikuntha. So he enters this realm of Vaikuntha, which is presided by Lord Narayana. And he sees so much opulence. Everybody is so beautiful. And all of them have beautiful four-handed forms. They all look just like the Lord, and in fact he even mistakes the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha to be Narayana. And like this, he meets Lord Narayana, he sees Lord Lakshmi, he gets an opportunity to serve them and all that. But Gopakumara was always in the mood of a cowherd boy. So even when he saw Lord Narayana, he would call him, Gopal, and he would want to play with Lord Narayana because he was in the mood of a cowherd boy. So like this, when the residents of Vaikuntha saw him like this, they offered him the four-armed form of the other residents. Like the other residents had four-armed Sarupya forms, right? So like that, he was also offered that form. But Gopakumar refused to accept it. And when he called the Lord Gopal and he said, come and play with me and all that, the residents, they advised him not to take these incarnations performed and the pastimes performed by the Lord for the sake of Leela. They told him not to take it very seriously. They said, no, our Lord, he's the Supreme Lord, he's Narayan, and he's so opulent. He's just, taken these incarnations to reduce the burden of the earth, but you don't have to take it so seriously. Like that, he was discouraged. And later, you see that this Gopakumar, he was not feeling satisfied because he just couldn't connect to this form of the Lord and the kind reverence that everybody was showing in Vaikuntha. He just couldn't get it. So he found it very, very odd, and in the mood of a cowherd boy, he wanted to go away from there. So then later, Narada Muni, he appears and he tells Gopakumar that he should actually leave this place and he should go to Ayodhya, which is the next level. Okay. So just now we saw the different portions in Haridam. We saw how first portion is the Vaikuntha, where you have the Narayana forms, and just above that is Ayodhya. Okay, so then he goes to Ayodhya. Now when Gopakumar went to Ayodhya, by the mercy of Lord Narada, there he saw people, the one statement Gopakumar makes, he says, the people he saw there were more beautiful than the people who were serving Lord Narayan. So this people who were serving Narayan were so explicitly beautiful, actually. If you look, if the way it is described, very beautiful four-handed form, nice color like the Lord, and they all looked exactly like the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how would the Gopakumar mistake the gatekeepers for the Supreme Lord, right? So like this, they looked exquisitely beautiful. In fact, the wives of the associates of Lord Narayana is described to be tremendously beautiful like that. But when Gopakumar went to Ayodhya, he saw that these residents are even more beautiful than the residents of this Vaikuntha realm. Why? Because they were in two-handed form. Two-handed form is even more beautiful. So like this, when he saw the residents of Ayodhya, he was struck with wonder. He saw very beautiful residents of Ayodhya with two-handed form. He saw different monkeys jumping in and out of the palace. Like this, he saw a lot of Ram's devotees. And in fact, when Gopakumar, he was actually entering the palace of Lord Ramachandra, he saw Shatrughna, who is the brother of Lord Rama, and he mistook him for Lord Rama, and he offered his obeisances. And then Shatrughna was like, no, I am not Lord Ram. Lord Ram is my elder brother, and he is the Supreme Lord. Like that, there was a conversation. So everybody looks as beautiful as Lord Ram, even in Ayodhya. And there even he saw how Hanuman was serving Lord Ram in many ways. So like this, he was interacting with different devotees and he was having conversations, but still he was not able to see Krishna. Krishna was his worshipable Lord. He was not able to see that cowherd boy Krishna, so he was not satisfied. Again, by the mercy of Narada, he went to Dwaraka chanting his mantra. And actually, he was given a mantra to travel to all these places. So then he went to Dwaraka. There, he saw Krishna. He was very happy. So above Ayodhya is Dwaraka. So we are going to the next realm. Okay, we have seen in Haridam, the beginning is Vaikuntha. Then we have seen Ayodhya. Now we are getting into Dwaraka. So there, Krishna, he saw Krishna. He was extremely happy because he saw Krishna. But there Krishna was a king. He was not a simple cowherd boy. And seeing Gopakumar like this in the dress of a cowherd boy having a flute, Krishna seeing him, this King Krishna, he got into a mood of separation, thinking of the Brajavasis. He got into a mood of separation. So all the people around the king and Dwaraka, they were all, you know, telling this Gopi, better take up a kingly attire and an attire that is suitable to live in Dwaraka. Why are you dressed like this? And because of you, our king is having feelings of separation. So like that, fine. And he refuses that. He says, no, this is not what I want. And then finally, over a period of time, after going through all these different levels, Dwaraka, Mathura, and finally he reaches Goloka Vrindavan. And when he reaches Goloka Vrindavan, he's so happy because he's in the mood of a cowherd boy, and he sees Lord Krishna, who's Gopal, and he goes and he embraces him. And that is the story of Gopakumar. So in the story of Gopakumar, you will see him traveling through all these different regions. So that's just an example for us to understand how these different regions are placed. So in Goloka Vrindavan, it is only pure sweetness that prevails. There is no mood of simple servitude like it is seen in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is pure servitude, whereas in Goloka Vrindavan, even if there is service, it is always mixed with another mood. Like, for example, it is either mixed with Vatsalya or Madhurya, like that. It's always a mixed thing that is seen in Goloka Vrindavan. We have discussed this in the previous classes also. So like this, everything has a mixture of rasas. So this is the topmost planetary system, Goloka Vrindavan, and that is what this verse says, Goloka Namni Nijadamni. This is the verse about where Goloka Vrindavan is situated, and how actually we get that entire Goloka chart that we have is actually based on this one verse. If you look at it, it says about at different levels at which different planetary systems are seen. Right from the material world, there are 14 planetary systems, Devi Dham, then you go to Mahesh Dham, and then in Haridham you have Vaikuntha, and then there are gradations, you have Ayodhya, Dwaraka, Mathura, and Goloka Vrindavan. So this is about text number 43. Now we'll get into 44. I think the purport is also very similar to what I just spoke, so I didn't read the purport, though it's quite short. So we'll get into text 44. This verse is going to talk about Durga Devi, how Maya, the controller of the material world. So I'll read that verse. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Reka Chaye Vayasya Bhuvanani Bibharti Durga Ichchanurupa Mapiyasya Cha Chistati sa Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Srishti, creation, Stiti, preservation, Pralaya and destruction, Sadhana, the agency, Shaktihi, potency, Eka, one, Chaya, the shadow, Iva, like, Yasya, of whom, Bhuvanani, the mundane world, Bibharti, maintains, Durga, Icha, the will, Anurupam, in accordance with, Api, certainly, Yasya, of whom, Cha and Chestate, conducts herself, Sa, she, Govindam, Govinda, Adipurusham, the original person, Tam, him, Aham, I, Bajami, worship. Translation. The external potency, Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the chip potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. So this verse pretty much states that Durga is actually subservient to Lord Govinda, and she controls this material world. Okay. So talking about Durga, this is all from the purport that I am actually talking. Durga is described as riding on a lion. That is her vahana. She has a lion vahana. And she has 10 arms. And these 10 arms, they represent 10 phases of life or 10 samskaras that we all go through to achieve success in our life, whether it is material or spiritual. Each of these 10 arms, she has different weapons, especially the trident, that is the famous weapon that Lord Durga, Goddess Durga Devi carries, the trident. The trident has three prongs, and these represent the threefold miseries of life. And also we know that it is actually sattva, rajas and tamoguna, the three ends of these trident. And the 10 arms carrying 10 weapons, as I mentioned, they represent the different samskaras. So basically, in this material world, as you go through different phases of these samskaras, you're getting more and more caught. What are these samskaras that we go through, right from Garbhadhana samskara to Namakarana, then you have Jata Karma, you have the hair cutting ceremony, then there is grains giving ceremony, the first grain ceremony, name giving ceremony, Upanayana, Samvartana, going to school, then there is marriage, then like that it goes on and on till death. So like this, there are 10 different samskaras that a human being goes through, and her 10 arms carrying these 10 weapons represent these samskaras, because she is actually pretty much controlling you by, as you are going through these 10 samskaras, you're more and more getting involved in this world, and you're getting more and more stuck in this world. So Prabhupada, he says, Durga means prison house. The meaning of Durga is prison house. Okay, and she is the controller of this prison house, this material world. So somehow or the other, she will catch you. Even if you dodge her weapons, if you dodge her trishul, the sword will catch you. If you dodge the sword, something else will catch you. If you're successful in dodging all the 10 weapons, then the lion will catch you, because she's riding on the lion. Like this, she's anyhow going to catch you as you go through these different phases in life. But if you surrender to Krishna, you can escape from the effect of Durga. So that's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivi Yesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya. So like this, when you surrender unto Krishna, though it is very difficult to get out of this material world, he and she, both of them will help you. And she is the goddess of the material realm, and all her activities are controlling this world. And so when we perform transcendental activities, then we come under the control of her spiritual counterpart, who is Yoga Maya. Okay, so the same Mahamaya has another face, you can say. Her spiritual counterpart is Yoga Maya. Okay, so generally when we talk about Mahamaya, in fact, Prabhupada named one devotee as Mahamaya, and everybody started laughing. So it's not to be seen, and Prabhupada corrected them. He told them there's nothing to laugh about it. It is Krishna's energy. And the same Mahamaya, depending on how you are probably surrendering to Krishna, her effect will change. She can, she can guide you as Yoga Maya, like that. So this Durga, she rides on a lion. And this lion represents her prowess. It represents her victory. And as a lion is very passionate. It subdues all animals. Like this, she subdues all the souls, and it is described that she tramples upon Mahishasura. So like this, Mahishasura represents all the vices. So Durga pretty much tramples on all our vices. To defeat Mahishasura, all the demigods, they gave their weapons to Durga Devi. So like this, they all took shelter of Durga. So like this, she can defeat all the vices that we have, and these vices are represented by Mahishasura. And also she is the mother of Kartikeya and Ganesh, who represent beauty and success. She is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati, Lakshmi representing mundane wealth and Saraswati representing mundane knowledge. So she's there everywhere. She's controlling everything. So everything is under the jurisdiction of Durga Devi. She doesn't enjoy doing this. She doesn't enjoy subduing living entities or something. She's just doing her duty. And by doing this, she inspires the living entity to get out of her clutches and surrender unto Krishna. So basically, she pushes all the living entities to wake up and take shelter of the Lord. So that is her duty. So that's why she's performing all these activities. So when we think in terms of aham, mameti, me and mine, that means we are covered by Maya. We are in this fortress of Durga. And generally, when we just described about Durga Devi, worshippers of Durga Devi, they are very wealthy because they get boons of wealth, beauty, and other things, because she is giving many deluding gifts. Just like we saw how she is the mother of beauty and success, which is represented by Kartikeya and Ganesha, and also she is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati. She will give us everything, all the material deluding gifts. But depending on the purity of her consciousness, the same thing can be used in the service of Krishna. At that time, she protects the devotees of the Lord. And Durga actually, she even punishes the demons who are a disturbance to the Lord, Lord and his devotees. That is also one of her functions. Just like in the fifth canto, we see a story of Jadabharat, what happens to him. I'll just quickly read some verses from that to just show how Durga functions. It is not like something to be like, you know, we always say, oh, Maya is very bad, Maya is very bad. Yes, as you see, if you're trying to surrender unto Maya, yes, it is very bad. But actually, Durga Devi, she has a very special position. She can even help a pure devotee to progress in Krishna consciousness. So, in fact, the asuras, they all worship Durga. If you see, most of the asuras, they're all Durga worshippers. But when they get totally out of control, she is the one who kills them. So that she has a very, very special position, Durga Devi. And I just wanted to read some verses from the story of Jadabharat. This is in Canto 5, Chapter 9. I'll just read, basically for us to understand how Durga works or what is her actual nature. There is the story of Jadabharat. We all know the story of Bharat Maharaj. So Bharat Maharaj, in the first birth, he was born as Emperor Bharat, and then because of a deer, when he was dying, he was too attached to a deer, and hence the next birth he had to take the body of a deer. And while he was in the body of a deer, we know he remembered his previous birth, and he made sure that he lived near sadhus, and he took prasadam and all that. And the next birth, he got a human form, and he was the son of a Brahmana. And for some reason, because of all this previous impressions, because he knew what all he had to go through, he made sure that he doesn't get too entangled in this material world. So he was commonly known as Jadabharat. He acted like somewhat like a crazy, uninformed person. So he was known as Jadabharat. And Jadabharat, his brothers used to take advantage of him because he didn't appear to be like a usual, normal person. So his brothers would all cheat him, and they would, you know, use him to get some work done like this. So all his stepbrothers and everyone else, they took advantage, and they were engaging him in agricultural field work in exchange for some food just to maintain his body. However, this Jadabharat, he was not really very well informed. He didn't know how to work in the field and all that. He did not know where to spread dirt or where to make the ground level or uneven. And his brothers used to give him some broken rice, oil cakes, and the chaff of rice, worm-eaten grains and burnt grains that were stuck to the pot. All refuse, all unwanted, whatever food that you would trash, rather, or whatever food was not edible, they would give that to this boy, and he would gladly accept it as if it was nectar. And he never held any grudges against them. He was a very, very simple man. Whatever little work they asked him to do, he would do, and whatever they gave him, he used to happily accept it. So like that, he was taking care of the agricultural field of his brothers. Now, at that time, there was a particular tribe that was living close by, and the tribe leader, he wanted to have a son. These tribes, Shudra people, what they used to do is they used to worship Bhadrakali, and they used to offer someone in sacrifice to her. Okay, so by offering an animal-like man, the idea was that the chief would have a son. So this was the idea that the chief had. And they captured an animal-like man for sacrifice, but somehow or the other he escaped. And then leader, he sent all his men in different directions to go and find someone so that he could give a human sacrifice to Bhadrakali. Okay, so this was the idea, and the tribal men, they were going in different places, and finally they saw this Jadabharat, who was sitting in this agricultural place, in an elevated place. And when they saw this boy, they thought, okay, this is a very suitable man animal to be given to Bhadrakali. And they caught this boy, they bound him by ropes, and they brought him to the temple of Goddess Kali. Okay, after this, the thieves and these tribes, according to their imaginative ritual for killing animalistic men, they bathed Jadabharat, they dressed him in new clothes, decorated him with ornaments, just like an animal, smeared his body with scented oils, decorated him with tilak, sandalwood pulp, garlands. Then they fed him very nicely and they brought him in front of Goddess Kali as an offering. And then they offered Kali incense, lambs, garlands, grain, all that sprouts, flowers, everything, whatever they had, they offered everything to Kali, and they wanted to give this boy as a offering, like kill him and give him as an offering. So like this, they were worshipping Kali before they were about to kill this Jadabharat, and they were all vibrating different prayers, and they were playing drums so that they could make this boy sit down and then chop off his head. So at that time, one of the thieves or one of these tribe persons, he was ready to offer Jadabharat, and he gave some liquor to Goddess Kali. They do all this. They offer meat and liquor to Goddess Kali. And then he took up a sword and he was raised it to kill Jadabharat. Like you have seen, right, how they do animal sacrifices even now in many places in India. It still happens actually. So the head of the animal is chopped off with a big sword kind of weapon. So like that, they are going to give Narabali, they say. They are going to kill this person, this Jadabharat. So at that time, when they raised this, when they made all these arrangements, and these people, they were all worshippers of Goddess Kali, and they were very low-minded. They were bound to the modes of passion and ignorance. And why they were trying to kill him is because they wanted to have a son. They were overpowered. This is all Bhagavatam's verses, actually, I'm reading. Why they are giving this Narabali. They were overpowered by desires to become rich. Therefore, they had the audacity to disobey the injunctions of the Vedas, so much so that they prepared to kill Jadabharat, a self-realized son born in a Brahmana family. Due to their envy, these dacoits brought him before Goddess Kali for sacrifice. Such people are always addicted to envious activities, and therefore they dared to kill Jadabharat. Jadabharat was the best friend of all living entities. He was no one's enemy, and he was always absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was born of a good Brahmana father, and killing him was forbidden, even though he might have been an enemy or aggressive person. In any case, there was no reason to kill Jadabharat, and the goddess Kali could not bear this. She could immediately understand that these sinful dacoits were about to kill a great devotee of the Lord. Suddenly, the deity's body burst asunder, and Goddess Kali personally emerged from it in a body burning with an intense and intolerable effulgence. So Goddess Kali, she comes out from her deity. Intolerant of the offense committed, the infuriated Goddess Kali flashed her eyes and displayed her fierce curved teeth. Her reddish eyes glowed and she displayed her fearsome features. She assumed a frightening body as if she were prepared to destroy the entire creation. Leaping violently from the altar, she immediately decapitated all the rogues and thieves with the very sword with which they had intended to kill Jadabharat. She then began to drink the hot blood that flowed from the necks of the beheaded rogues and thieves, as if this blood were liquor. Indeed, she drank this intoxicant with her associates, who were witches and female demons. Becoming intoxicated with this blood, they all began to sing very loudly and dance as though prepared to annihilate the entire universe. At the same time, they began to play with the heads of the rogues and thieves, tossing them about as if they were all balls. When an envious person commits an offense before a great personality, he is always punished in the way mentioned above. So Goddess Kali, or Goddess Durga, she is always a protector of devotees. So it just depends on our consciousness at the end of the day. There's nothing negative to feel about Durga or Maya Devi. So this is a very beautiful story that describes the position of Goddess Durga, how she actually feels. Okay. In fact, there are some references. Actually, there's Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was sharing some very interesting references about how sometimes Goddess Durga is described as a supreme controller, because the potency and the potent are the same. This is explained in Gautamiya Tantra. See, she is the potency, she is the external potency of the Lord. We should accept that, right? So in the Gautamiya Tantra, it is mentioned, Krishna is Durga, Durga is Krishna. If you see them different, you are not liberated. Spiritual Durga is not manifested from the illusory potency. So if you, and there are so many references to understand her properly. Saintly devotees call her Durga. Durga means also difficult to understand. She is actually filled with love. This is the kind of personality she is. Like that, there are so many references that are given from different Vaishnava scriptures, like Narada Panchratra also, that this is the actual position of Durga Devi. Okay. So next, we will get into verse number 45.
Kshiram yatada divikara visesha yogat sanjayate nahi tatah pratag asti heto ya sambhutama pitata samupaiti karyad govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami.
This is a very famous verse. Kshiram yatada divikara visesha. So kshiram is milk, yata as dadi, yogurt, vikara visesha, of a special transformation, yogat, by the application, sanjayate is transformed into na, not, he, indeed, tataha, from milk, pratak, separated, asti is hetoho, which is the cause, ya, who, sambhutam, the nature of Lord Shiva, Shambhutam, the nature of Lord Shiva, api also tatatas, samupaiti, accepts, karyat, of the matter of some particular business, govindam, govinda, adiparusham, the original person, tam, him, aham, I, bhajami, worship. This is a very famous verse. Everyone, I think, knows at least the meaning of this verse. Translation, just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect of curd is neither the same as nor different from the cause, which is milk. So I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the purpose, for the performance of the work of destruction. So in the previous verse, we saw Durga. First we saw the different levels of creation. Like we saw how you have the material world, Devi Dham, and then you have Mahesh Dham, and then you have Hari Dham, right? So now we saw who Lord Shiva, who Goddess Durga is. Now we are going to see who Lord Shiva is, okay? So, actually we have already dealt that a little bit already in the, I think in the first verse that we discussed today about Shiva Tattva. But there is some more description about Lord Shiva. And this is in detail about Shambhu and not the spiritual Sadashiva. We are not talking about him in this verse. We are talking about Shambhu, who is a transformation. Okay. The real nature of Shambhu, the presiding deity of Mahesh Dham, is described in this verse. This is how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati begins the purport. He says, Shambhu is not a second godhead other than Krishna. That means, Shambhu and Krishna are actually not equal, okay? They are not the same. Those who entertain such discriminating sentiment commit a great offense against the Supreme Lord. The supremacy of Shambhu is always subservient to that of Govinda. Hence, they are not really different from each other. This non-distinction is established by the fact that just as milk is treated with acid, it turns into curd. So Godhead becomes a subservient when he himself attains a distinct personality by the addition of a particular element of adulteration. This personality has no independent initiative. So it's a very beautiful analogy for us to understand how Lord Shiva is actually a transformation of Lord Vishnu. But at the same time, he's not the same, just as milk and curd. So when milk comes in contact with an acid, it becomes curd. But the curd, though it is derived from milk, it cannot be used like milk. Like you cannot use curd or yogurt to probably make, you know, like your herbal coffee or your regular kheer or something like that. You can, the yogurt that you get cannot be used in as a replacement for milk. So they are not the same. Though it is in one sense got from milk, it is actually a transformation of milk. So like this non-distinction, the similarity between Shambhu and Vishnu, they are one, yet they are not one. It's like that. So it's just established by the fact that just as milk is treated with acid, turns into curd, so Godhead becomes subservient when he himself attains a distinct personality by the addition of a particular element. Spiritual potency. So what is the meaning of this sentence? So stupefying quality of, see, there are two effects that what is the adulterating principle is what we are discussing. What is it that transforms Vishnu Vishnu into Shambhu? What is it that transforms? How did Shambhu become adulterated? What is this adulterating principle? This adulterating principle is divided into two parts. One is the stupefying quality of material energy. That means the effect of Maya, okay, the effect of Durga, the effect of Maya. The effect of Maya is stupefying. That means one becomes confused and affected by material nature. So this effect comes to play on Lord Shiva. Okay, why? Because he's the husband of Maya. He's the better half. So he accepts her influence. So like that, because he's intimately related to Maya, he accepts her stupefying quality of becoming confused. Okay, so he accepts her influence. That's part of the adulteration. The other part of the adulteration is that Lord Shiva is intimately connected with the Jivas. How? Because he is the father. It was he, his that dim halo that was actually injected into the material energy, right? So he is actually the immediate father of the living entities. And hence, the limited nature of the Jivas, see, Krishna or the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Narayana, they are complete, okay? We have limited nature. We don't have unlimited nature. So we have a limiting quality, the Jivas. He being in immediate contact with us, he also takes up this kind of a nature, and because he's intimately connected with us and he becomes influenced by this. So this adulterating principle has two parts. One is the stupefying quality of Maya, because Maya is his wife, he takes on the quality of Maya. Second, because we are his immediate children, he takes on our quality. So this is the adulterating principle. Okay, and also, he is the transformation of the Supreme Lord, right? So he has a slight degree of ecstatic cognitive principle. The chit potency is still there. So Shambhu, he has 50 qualities in him. He has 50 qualities, 5 more than the Jivas. He's changeless because he's got the quality of the Supreme Lord, right? Because he's a transformation of the Supreme Lord. So he has 5 more qualities than the Jiva. What does he have? He's changeless. He's cognizant. The chit is there. He's cognizant. He's ever fresh. he's bliss ever blissful and he's eternally blissful. He has all mystic perfections. So these are the five qualities that Shambhu or Lord Shiva has more than the jivas. He's changeless, he's cognizant, he's fresh, he's blissful eternally, and he has all mystic perfections. So this is about Lord Shiva. Now this Shambhu, he actually takes care of everything. He takes care of creation, maintenance and destruction. This is something you will find consistently everywhere in Shastra. You'll see that Lord Shiva actually takes care of everything. So how can we, we often know that Lord Shiva takes care of destruction. We have not heard of Lord Shiva taking care of creation or maintenance. But actually, how he takes care of maintenance is because he takes care of maintenance by destroying the demons with the help of his Shakti, who's Kali. We just saw how demons are killed by Kali. So she being his Shakti or energy, he takes care of maintenance, he takes care of annihilation by his cosmic dance, and he takes care of creation because he is the immediate contact that creates jivas, right? Like he and Maya together, they are our mother and father. So like this he takes care of all three in one sense. That is something you will find in many places, like Lord Shiva takes care of everything. So that's how it is justified. Now Shiva means all auspicious. One reason why he is all auspicious is because he's always meditating on Shankar's son, who's the Supreme Lord. And he, at the same time, he's also called as Tamasi because he's the controller of the Tamoguna. And hence he's known as Tamasi. And one thing we should understand is many people, they also make this mistake that Lord Shiva is a destroyer, so he's not very important or he's something very less. No, that's not true, because Prabhupada, he gives this explanation. He says in a government, the criminal department is as important as the education department. So one should never think of Lord Shiva as less important. So Shiva, he takes care of the criminal department of destruction and punishing and all that. And that criminal department is as important as the educational department of preserving and things like that. So one should not consider Lord Shiva as being less important. If we do so, we take up the same offense that Daksha Maharaj did once. And hence Lord Shiva is always respected. And Lord Shiva is extremely humble, and he, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he speaks to Gopakumar, he says, he takes a very humble position and he explains to Gopakumar that he's very unfortunate. He says, Gopakumar, it looks like you're already going, to Vaikuntha, but I have a long time to go, something like that. You know, he talks in a very humble manner and he says, he says, I was so unfortunate that I had to take the role of a Brahmin and preach Mayavada philosophy to delude the people. Lord Shiva has this kind of a quality, and he's, as we all know, Vaishnava Namyatha Shambhu, he's the topmost Vaishnava. So this is the position of Lord Shiva. We discussed the position of Durga Devi, and we also discussed the position of Lord Shiva. Now we'll just do one more verse, which is verse number 46. This is also a very famous verse that talks about how all of these forms are actually one, because, and also there is this original candle which has lit all the other forms. This is a very famous verse. I'll read the verse. Verse 546. Deepar chereva hi dasantaram abhiyupyate ya deepayate vivartahetu samana dharma yastha Sadrug eva hicha Vishnutaya vibhati Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Deepa archihi, the flame of the lamp, eva as he certainly, dasha antaram, another lamp, abhyupteya, expanding, deepayate, illuminates, vivartahetu, with its expanded cause, samana dharma, equally powerful, who, tadrak, similarly, eva, indeed, he, certainly, cha, also, Vishnutaya, by his expansion as Lord Vishnu, Vibhati, illuminates, Govindam, Govinda, Adipurusham, the original person, tam, him, aham, I, bhajami, worship. Translation, the light of one candle being communicated to other candles, although it burns separately in them, is the same in quality. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. So this is a verse that talks about the point that Krishna is the original candle, and like just like how you can light many candles with one candle, and the flame coming out of each of these candles is equal in quality, right? But still there is an original candle. So like that, Krishna is compared to this original candle, and the remaining Vishnu Tattvas are all of equal quality. They all have the same flame, but still there is an original candle. So that is the verse that we are discussing. So when we talk about Krishna consciousness, it's not that we worship many gods, when we worship Krishna, Rama, Narayana, all of them, they are actually the same person. It is the same tattva. So Vishnu, this Vishnu, he always exists in Vishuddha Sattva. Vishnu, Krishna, Narayana, they are always in Vishuddha Sattva. In the sense, they are always in the state of pure goodness. Although, when we say Lord Vishnu presides over the mode of goodness, Lord Shiva presides over the mode of ignorance, Lord Brahma presides over the mode of passions, Vishnu, who is actually the controller of the mode of goodness, is actually not affected by the mode of goodness. He is in Vishuddha Sattva. That is, he is at a transcendental level of pure goodness. And whatever this goodness is actually taken charge by the demigods who are his assistants. They are actually taking care of it. And that's... and how do we know this? How can we prove this, that Vishnu is always in the pure state of pure goodness and he is not just in the state of mundane goodness? It is because by worshipping Vishnu, people are getting liberated and they get the kingdom of God. Hence, pure goodness is not ordinary goodness. The kind of pure goodness that Lord Vishnu is, because it's liberating. Worshipping him is liberating, means he's not in a position of just mundane goodness. So his worship brings about liberation. Hence, Lord Vishnu, though we say Gunavatar, O Vishnu is the controller of the mode of goodness, he's actually executing that through the medium of his associates who are the demigods. Okay, so this Vishnu or this entire Vishnu Tattva, they have inconceivable potency. And in fact, from Mahavishnu, Karno, Dakshay, Vishnu, so many universes are coming out from his body. And we see how, everything is actually coming out from Vishnu. The remaining creation and everything else is coming from the Supreme Lord. He's the giver of salvation and he's the attractor of all living entities. And all these, we already read this in one of the previous classes, like how all the incarnations are actually emanating from Krishna. So similarly, this verse also talks about the original candle, who is Krishna, and the rest of the incarnations of the Vishnu Tattva that is present even in the spiritual world are the same in quality. All of them have the same quality as Lord Krishna. So I'll stop here. If you have anything to add, any realizations, any corrections, please go ahead. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you very much. I joined a little bit late, I'm sorry. But I had a couple of questions. First one was, when you were speaking about that Shambhu had five more qualities than the Jivatma, can you say those again? And I have questions about those qualities. I know you said that they were... I don't remember. Can you say them one more time, and I'll ask my question?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Something about that they are...
cognizant. He's... let me go to that.
Yeah. I'm wondering, what is that different? Something about that they are eternally happy.
So it says, I'm a qualities, which is he's changeless.
Okay.
He's all cognizant. He's fresh, always fresh, eternally blissful, and he has all mystic perfections.
Okay, so I was just thinking about when you're saying, eternally blissful. So, is that the The eternally liberated souls are also eternally blissful. So what is the difference between Sambhu and them? Is it that they...
No, we are talking about conditioned jivas. I don't think it is applicable to eternally liberated souls.
Okay. So is it eternally liberated souls also fully cognizant and ever fresh? And do they have all those five qualities too? And if they do, then what's the difference? What's the difference between Sambhu and the eternally liberated souls? But Sambhu is always Sambhu. He's not one that changes. Like, it's not like a post like Brahma that changes. Right?
Yeah. Definitely. He's eternal, yes.
And his position is eternal, as the eternal, as... there's only one Sambhu.
Yes.
So now, what is the difference between Sadashiva and Sambhu? Is this when you're talking about Haridam and Devidam and Haridam? So is the Sadashiva in the Sivadam, or I forgot what dham you said, but you know, the Kailasa.
Sadashiva is actually present in the you can say the cornermost planet of Vaikuntha. So that's what I was explaining, that Ishana, if you see in the northeast corner of the Goloka chart, you'll find a planet called Ishana. And that is where he resides, actually. But for understanding's sake, just below the Vaikuntha realm, you will see a Sadashiva Loka, okay, that is illuminated. That is for understanding's sake. Okay, so basically this Mahesh Dham has two sections, Mahakala and Sadashiva. Now this Sadashiva is actually a portion of Vaikuntha, Sadashiva Dham. It's a portion of Vaikuntha. Okay? And this Sadashiva is actually an expansion of the Supreme Lord. He's not a transformation.
Okay. He's an expansion of the Supreme Lord, not a transformation. Okay.
Yeah, not a transformation.
And so that is Vishnu Tattva. Is that considered Vishnu Tattva then?
Yes. As far as I've understood it, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But still, Shiva Tattva is different. You know, in the sense, like, Shiva Tattva has these different levels. It has Sadashiva, it has so many personalities, or so many levels. It's very difficult to understand, even I've not understood it, actually.
Okay. So that's okay. I kind of was. Just a curious question there. Also, I wanted to read something that had to do with how you were saying how that for a pure devotee that yoga maya comes into play, and it reminded me of the verse of one of the in the Bhagavatam, the third canto of the Bhagavatam, the I think it's first chapter, and it talks about how Vidura was insulted by Duryodhana, and he leaves the palace. And so I just wanted to read this translation, and maybe the little poor part, if I could find the part I wanted to read. It says, so this is text 16. It says, thus being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, it says right in there. Let me see if I could find what he says. This is... thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally.
Oh,
that's what Prabhupada writes in the purport. So I just thought that was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
In how he wasn't worried, and then Prabhupada explains that it was the internal energy acting internally and externally. I wasn't sure exactly what internally, externally meant, except I was just thinking that the internal energy, which was yoga maya, as well as the external energy, mahamaya, were both playing their part. I'm thinking mahamaya by putting that situation in place so Duryodhana could insult him, and internal energy by guiding Vidura, by him understanding that this was all the plan of the Lord. So I just thought that was so amazing.
So nice. Thanks for sharing, Mataji.
Okay, thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna. Also, I had a question. Did anybody else get cut off in the middle? I kind of got cut off in the middle for a second. I lost you. Was that just me?
I got some disturbance in between.
Okay. I was wondering because it just comes suddenly, and then I thought, what happened? I said, hello, is it me? Is everybody there? And I didn't hear anything, so I was just wondering. But then you came back like about a minute later. Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mataji.
Hari Bol, Mataji. Wonderful class. Especially I like the verses. These verses clear a lot of confusion that can arise when we study the Puranas separately without understanding the whole picture, when we study different Puranas. So about Shiva Tattva, then Jadabharat and Gopakumar, all the examples you cited from Bhagavatam to connect these points were really helpful.
Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Good.
And do you have anything to add, Prabhu?
Mataji, just one thing. You remember, Mataji, we discussed previously about Bhur-Bhuvasva, that the Bhur-Bhuvasva. I read somewhere in Bhagavad Sandarbha, an essay based on Bhagavad Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, that even the planets lower the earth, like Atala, Vitala, all those, Jiva Goswami states in Bhagavad Sandarbha that they are also part of Bhur Loka.
Oh, is it? Oh. Yes. Because they are like Bilaswargas, they are like underneath heavenly planets, so?
All of them, all the ones that are below Earth. I was thinking that, you know, earthly is only Bhur Loka, but actually they are also counted along with Bhur Loka. In the Bhagavad Sandarbha, it was very fascinating to know that. Because a lot of times in the Gayatri Mantra, Bhur Bhuvasva, I used to wonder why they always neglect the hellish planet. Is it because it's like a prison? Then there are also devotees there, right, in below. So I was always wondering why we exclude them. But this was very interesting to know.
Thanks for sharing, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
Hari Bol, Mataji. Thank you.
Hari Bol.
And the point you mentioned about Sadashiva is also, Sadashiva, very complicated tattva. Between Vishnu and Jiva, so it's really hard to nail it down. And the way you explained Shambhu, Rudra, from Lord Brahma, it was all very good.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, and since you were talking about this Bhuloka and the Atala Vitala and all being included in Bhuloka, like it just reminds, you know, in some places they are also called as, like, if you dig under, like, what is it? I don't know where it is mentioned that if you dig under and keep going, you'll find these, underground cave like these planets actually as an extension of Bhuloka, like that. I think in Bhagavatam also in one verse it is like that.
I think some, even in Yamuna River, can connect, no?
Yeah. And in fact, four Kumaras also, through Ganges also they got connected, I think from higher planetary systems like that. I mean, like, of course, lower planetary systems from Yamuna, there are two, three pastimes where, there is one pastime of Bhima, and I think even the Nagaloka, who went? He entered the Nagal serpent's loka, like that.
Bhima when he was poisoned by Duryodhana and thrown in the river. Go to Nagaloka then.
Yeah. And then even who went to Varuna? I don't know, Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, where did he go? He went underwater to Samadhar Loka, right? I don't know where.
I don't remember, Mataji. I don't remember.
Okay, yeah, the Bhima is true. Yeah, he went to Nagaloka and all that, yeah.
I've heard some instances like they can connect through the rivers and go down.
I think in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, I think third canto, it speaks about how the sages would travel through the rivers, like go underneath, and then they would show up someplace else.
Yeah,
I don't remember if it was other planets, but hair would be wet. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And didn't Arjuna also go to Nagaloka or something? Is that how he married?
Ulu.
Something like that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Hare Bol Revati.
Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Mataji. It really clearly explains the Sadashiv Log and Durga, I mean like the position of all these. Thank you so much, Mataji.
Thank you so much,
Mataji. Because I have already, you know, asked you enough questions on this.
Thank you so much, Revati Mataji. So nice to have you on call.
Thank you, Mataji.
Yeah. So we are missing Ganapati Prabhu and Rishavan Prabhu today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay, then if no one else has any questions or comments, we'll end the call.
Yeah, Mataji.
Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitha
Pavanityo Vaishnavityo Namo Namaha
Namaranda Kejai Brahma Samhita Kejai Hare Krishna. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Ananta Ananta Hare Bol.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Bol.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you.